able to see it.
Sure.
This, in the small version, looked like it was in his throat.
Yeah, because he's the guy that can't feel pain, right?
Yeah. But then when you actually see it, it's in his shoulder. He looks still looks very angry, by the way.
Still looks like that should be painful.
Yeah, for sure. I'm like, bruh, you're an arrow.
I don't know about you, but every time I've taken an arrow anywhere, fucking sucks.
We're not talking sex talk either. We're talking like...
fucking bow and arrows, man.
Bow and arrows.
Don't get shot with those.
That is one of my favorite things about Destiny 2, though, is shooting aliens and robots with arrows. I'm like, this is... I can shoot lightning out of my hands, but I'm shooting arrows at these dudes.
No.
And the best part is they're Rambo arrows. They explode.
Oh, nice.
So every time I shoot somebody, I'm like, Rambo.
It's still the best part of any of the Rambo franchise. It was part two after those guys killed his girlfriend. And he just stood on that rock for like an hour, getting his shit ready while everyone's shooting at him, missing. He blows that bitch up.
That's not real. Is it real?
Yeah. What's... that was a couple years ago.
Really?
Yeah, when Cody was still in WWE doing the Stardust gimmick.
Someone needs to tape Neville's ears down. That's distracting.
That's why it wears hair down.
To extenuate them?
No, to cover them up.
He didn't. They were behind. The hair were behind.
Yeah, so but like during a match.
Oh, okay.
They should be done.
Oh. He done drop kicked the shit out of Cody Rhodes. Stardust, sorry.
He was the first like celebrity to come in and do anything physical that like really looked like obviously not fantastic, not to the level of the other guys, obviously. Yeah. But it was like, oh wow, he's really good at this. Like he could do this if he wanted to, you know.
He's done this a few
times. He's a legit athlete. He had at that big All In pay-per-view, he had his first singles match. One-on-one with a guy named Christopher Daniels.
Oh, it was a one-on?
Yeah, man. So, no, because he's had three matches now. He had that match at SummerSlam. He had one in Ring of Honor where he was with Cody and the Bullet Club guys, like a multi-man tag. That's where he took a powerbomb through a table, which I'm sure made the CW guys real fucking happy.
Yeah.
Insurance
guy literally had a heart attack.
Yeah, and then he had a one-on-one with Christopher Daniels. Christopher Daniels is like... an older pro wrestler, not older, he's like in his 40s, but he's been wrestling for like 20 plus years, like a super good person to have take care of you if you're having your first singles match.
If you type in word Christopher in Google, Daniels is the third one that comes up.
Yeah, it's probably not Christopher Daniels though.
Nope, it is.
It's a wrestler. Really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Impact Wrestling.
Yeah.
Nah, he here.
Ring of Honor, no.
He's wearing an Impact Wrestling shirt, that's why I said it. Oh, he is old. Motherfucker's 48 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was like the best choice for, you know, sneak Stephen Amell on that in a one-on-one, and you know he was going to be safe, you know? But the match was solid. Like, Amell started gassing at the end. You could kind of tell the match went on probably.
He has a Nazi villain like, thing going on.
Yeah.
What's that about?
He's had many.
Like, this one is many upsetting.
Carnations.
Like, that shit, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's not a Nazi thing, but it's, you know, it's got Nazi undertones.
Yeah. Anyways, go ahead. You're saying?
No, the match went on probably a little bit too long, but Amell had himself well, man.
Yeah, did well.
He's like a part-time wrestler now.
So this arrow thing doesn't work out.
Right into Ring of Honor.
Yep. Interesting. Interesting.
Did you see pictures of Brandy Rhodes yet, though?
Yeah. Yep. I'm going to save them for later.
I told you, man.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. Good job, Cody.
Cody's living the life.
Yeah, man. Wrestling in different ways. If you know what I mean. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. Say no more. Sex. Talking about sex.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you meant acting. The acting thing he's doing.
Nah. Oh, speaking of acting. Speaking of acting. Come snatch it. We are
Joe, Mike.
I am Cody. Welcome to the show, everybody. Just so you know, that wasn't actually Joe.
Nah, that was me.
Yeah, that was Mike. Because Joe ain't here because he a sick ass bitch.
You know what's funny is I just said that off of like repetitive nature. Like I know when you say that, Joe's supposed to be the first thing you hear.
And you said it, and normally you say it in your head, this time you said it out loud, like, yeah. Joe, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm wrong chair, wrong chair. I don't know who I am.
If this podcast sounds weird to you, it's because, one, Joe's not here, and I'm sitting in his spot because he's got the fancy chair. And everything's just weird in this world now.
Yep.
The whole world is fucked now. Joe's sick, apparently.
Cats and dogs sleeping together. Anyhow, we were talking about some wrestling because of Arrow. But before that, what led to that is we were talking about Ruby Rose being Batwoman in the first photo from her new television program. It's going to be hitting CW next year sometime. They might introduce her in the crossover event this year.
That's usually how the rumor.
Because that's called Elseworlds is the title of it. And this could be a thing where, you know, you have a Gotham City without a Batman, but you have a Batwoman.
Makes sense.
You know, it's a good way of avoiding having to make a Batman. Because, you know, so far they haven't really done so great with Batmans.
They've never really done a TV Batman, right? Like outside of the 66?
Yeah, not really. I mean, other than animated, obviously. There's always, they've been trying several, they've tried several times, but it just hasn't worked out. Which is weird, because like, Arrow was like proving ground that you could do it without having to have fantastical anything.
Well, I always told everybody, Arrow and Flash is the closest you're going to get to a Batman Superman.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
TV show.
Even though Superman is the thing.
Yeah.
Supergirl. But, you know, whatever. I ain't in charge. That Berlanti guy, though, he's trying things. He is trying things.
Can you imagine if the Gotham show did everything right, like it was supposed to?
Everything that they said they were going to do, and then went away from it.
Yeah, it was just a monster of the week show now.
Yep, and I was just like, "Ooh, look, here's a monster. Cool, we're still normal people, but he's a monster for some reason. I don't know. Whatever, man." DC's fragmented at best.
Yeah. Which is, it sucks because everyone knows I'm like a big DC apologist.
Yeah.
But they make it hard to figure out what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, man.
But then they'll make shit that I like a lot and it's like, oh, just do more of that. And then they're like, and we're changing everything.
Or not, whichever one. That's cool. That's cool. So Mike, we have planned to talk about two movies this week. Obviously without Joe here, who no one really cares about anyways, because his opinion is terrible most of the time. And I can say that because guess what? He'll never hear this.
That's true. He never will.
He's a terrible person, but he doesn't listen to his own show.
And if you don't know us in real life, he's very fat.
Yeah,
he's
for sure.
He's easily the fattest out of the three of us.
Yeah.
Like insanely fat.
Yeah. We're worried for his health right now because he's air quotes sick.
Yeah, I think it's more of a, he ate too many cheeseburgers and he
fat,
can't get up.
Garbage human being. Fat garbage human being who has terrible, terrible opinions.
And he's not nice to people.
No. He's like, actually one of the worst people to ever know.
He's very mean.
Yeah. He kicked a baby once.
Yeah. Not like a baby puppy. Like a baby.
An actual human baby.
Like it was in a car seat.
Yeah.
He kicked it. Yeah. I was like,
out of the car seat.
But, you know, every group has that one friend, I guess.
We thought it was Taj.
Yeah, but apparently
yeah.
Our one terrible, awful friend. Yeah. It just happens to be the terribly fat friend as well.
Yeah. Who basically goes against everything Canadians are usually associated
with. Yeah, for being a Canadian, he's very, very deep American.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Hey, so what are we talking about today?
You want to start with the one that people can watch?
Well, technically, by the time this comes out, they can watch both.
Yeah, but it comes out Friday morning, so.
We'll start with Venom. I mean, start with Venom. Want to do Venom
first? Let's start with Venom.
Venom! Good, because that's the website that I pulled up first.
Nice.
I didn't know why I pulled it first. It was like, oh, we're talking about Venom. So we'll go around the table. We'll start with, today we'll start with, oh, looks like Mike's ready to go.
I'm ready to go.
Michael, we're going to do our normal. Did you or did you not like it? And three things you liked and one thing you were surprised by.
I liked it a lot, which I almost feel this is starting to become, like a common thing. It's like, I don't like everything. I really don't. But the stuff I make intentional, you know, ways to go see are things that are up my alley. Unlike critics who they go and watch shit they know they're not going to like, so they can bitch about it later.
Yep.
If it's something I think I'm really not going to like, I will avoid it. But Venom, I thought I would like it. I watched it. I liked it a lot. There's... All right, well, I'll do the three things. One is like just Tom Hardy in general. I was saying earlier, every time I see a Tom Hardy movie, it makes me want to go watch other Tom Hardy movies.
Yep.
He's like top of the list of just like... Whether the movie's good or not, he always at least makes interesting choices and usually knocks it out of the park. He's, I would say, the best act. One of, it's hard to say the best. I'd have to really sit down and think about it, but he's the top small handful of actors, like three or four actors that are just bankable. Like he's a stud in pretty much everything that he does, and he's got great range. So just him in general, getting to see Tom Hardy really chew up scenery and portray somebody going through something like this, you know, and to be able to kind of flex like a little bit of comedic chops too, a little bit, which was nice. So that was cool. The visuals on this were way better than I was expecting. I was ready for this movie to kind of suck.
Yeah.
You know, with as good as Tom Hardy is, I was ready for this movie to not really make much sense and to be convoluted and to let you down when it came to the action sequences. I was wrong about that. Like the visuals, Venom himself looked so good, and his When they go full Venom in the movie, his whole body is in a constant state of movement all the time.
It ripples, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not just like a person in a suit. You know what I mean? He is that thing, and he is a living, breathing entity. So all the ripples, like all the like everything's constantly moving. It looks good. The way the light and reflection hits off of it when they're by water, it, you know what I mean, like everything just visually looked amazing with Venom, which that's obviously a highly CGI character.
Those CG,
yeah, a little bit.
Dang.
Most of it's taking place in the night, so you have that, but usually where that's a crutch for something like this, I think they really They had to make Venom in the night because it just makes more sense to have Venom at night. It's like seeing Batman in the day. It seems odd when you see that. So, but like reflections, because the suit is kind of slimy. Yeah. It looks kind of wet a little bit. Or not the suit, but Venom himself. And so like you see like traffic light reflections off of him. Headlights coming off of him. And the parts where the symbiote is just shooting out of him when he's not full Venom just looks good, dude. Like it all makes sense. It moves uniquely. It doesn't move like a spider web would, because that's kind of in my head what I was expecting it to be, like a, you know, Peter Parker spider web. Pew. A straight line, but it's not. It's this constant evolving gnarly thing tentacle that's in motion. So yeah, to give credence to the fact that it's its own entity and its own living, breathing, thinking thing, I thought that was super amazing. The third thing I liked about it were the action sequences. which I was ready for this to let you down action wise, because I could very well see we saw Venom for a little bit, but he didn't really do much. But nah, man, Venom's in it a lot, and it takes a while to get full Venom in it, but once he's there, like, he whoops some ass. The SWAT team fight, when he's in that building, he is just wrecking fools, and he's taking bullets, he's grabbing gas canisters and blowing them up and shit. Everything about that was fantastic. And then later on in the movie, he's going one-on-one against Riot, who is, they even address it in the movie, is a bigger, more powerful symbiote than Venom is, and he has to use a different style of fighting than he was using before. And it looked good. And the way he moved to chase him down, it was very animalistic. It wasn't, you didn't see Venom just running in a straight line. You know, he's bouncing off of walls. He's like, if you, my first exposure to Venom is the 92 cartoon series.
Yeah.
Something like that. 92, 94. And that was always like, okay, that's how I compare all Venom to. And some of the comics that I've read, he's slightly different. But the key thing is he's an animal, really. Like, he's more of a beast than a person. So it's the climbing on the walls and jumping off, almost as if, like the way he climbs in the walls, he shoves his hands into him. He doesn't stick on him like Spider-Man. And then he jumps off, kind of almost like if a giant gorilla was running up him. Like, that's kind of how it would look. And so the action sequences, he moved like that. He fought like that. So the action sequences are my third favorite thing. But the thing that surprised me the most is honestly probably my favorite thing about the movie is the dialogue between Eddie Brock and Venom themselves. It was funnier than I was expecting it to be. Like, they obviously used it as like a almost like a buddy cop kind of formula, you know, like they were arguing and bickering with each other. And when they got comfortable towards the end, it got more funny. They got opened up and then like open lines of dialogue with each other, which was really cool. And a really neat thing that they did, which we were talking about earlier, is so when Eddie Brock is Eddie Brock, he hears Venom. When Venom is Venom, he hears Eddie Brock. And so it sets up this thing where it's not one takes over or the other takes over. Like, they're, by the end of it, they're a team and they're working together, which if you watch the final fight scene, that's why he's able to top Riot, is because he has a better connection between those two than Riot does with his host.
Drake.
And
not the Canadian singer from the wheelchair show.
From the wheelchair show.
Isn't that what it was?
Yeah, but that's not how most people.
Oh, the wheelchair actor from the
High school Degrassi show.
That's the one. Sorry.
But yeah, so just
don't worry, guys. He got better.
Just the fact anymore. That the little details of they have a stronger link, they work together. It was just really cool. And then, like I said, it was like having two characters. It's not like, oh, he turns into this and now it's just that. No, like, it's taken into account. Like, Eddie Brock is still in there. He's still working. He's still doing stuff. And Venom is like the muscle, you know what I mean? But it was really cool. And like I said, the communication between the two of them was hilarious. They're kind of talking shit to each other the whole time. Venom gets a sense of humor at one point, you know, like I will say, does it lacks in some story, right? Obviously. Yes, it does. It lacks a little bit in things that like character building. Yeah, sure. Maybe. It makes some jumps where you just have to kind of say, okay, I'm on board with this, but it is a true like popcorn movie theater flick. Like, you go into this movie theater, I kind of think of Pacific Rim when I think of this movie. Pacific Rim was such a fun movie just to go and watch and enjoy, and had just enough story and had just enough, you know, human element to it where you're like, okay, it's just not, it can't be awful. It's pretty good, you know, but if it is what it is, that movie is a fucking giant robots fighting giant monsters. This movie is what it is. It's Venom fucking shit up as Venom. And this is the first time we get to see a good, real live action Venom, and they fucking killed it. And I hope we get that sequel, because they need that Venom versus Carnage shit to happen. That would be so good with the way they do this character. I couldn't imagine it not being fucking amazing, you know? But that's it. Cody?
I didn't care for it. Just kidding. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I was much like Michael going in with it more with a grain of salt than anything else. Like, well, you know, the TV spots and the trailers give us a lot of sizzle and not a lot of anything else, so I guess that's what we're going to get out of it, you know? But actually drastically surprised by how much they actually did really focus on the Eddie Brock character, and luckily enough, not worried about anybody else. They didn't worry about building up the, air quotes, bad guy, because it's, and unlike most of the time, it's not really about them.
No.
You know, especially a lot of Spider-Man movies, there's a lot of focus on the villain, because everyone knows Spider-Man, and Spider-Man's the good guy. We need to see why the villain is villain. In this, you have a guy who is not really a bad guy, but not really a good guy. And he just happens to, you know, find an alien species that's fucking just as terrible as he is.
Yep.
And just kind of explanation. And like Mike said, the difference between the good guy and the bad guy is, the good guy still eats people's heads, but the bad guy wants to murder everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, slightly different.
And the reason Venom doesn't want to go back to his planet makes me laugh, too. Yeah. He uses this line, and he goes, on my planet, I'm kind of a loser like you, yeah, while talking to Eddie Brock. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. There was one, speaking of visuals, for like Mike was saying, there's one scene where I was thrown off, and it was because Venom's head looked a little too small for his body, and it was the only time it was that way, and I think it was the way his head was turned, and I was like, oh, it's weirdly small for that really big body. But I was like, I didn't get up and walk out because of it, but I was like,
all right,
that's not a great shot. Like, you probably could have fixed that shot. No, I mean, I did enjoy it a lot. I liked the writing in it. I liked the fact that they gave you enough to know who Eddie Brock was, but not have to give you, like, oh, this is where he came from. And, like, they tied in. Like, I didn't see a whole lot of real big references to anything else. Probably the biggest reference is the fact that one of the main astronaut on the ship from the Life Foundation is named Jameson, who is, if you guys know, the lore of the symbiote is, he was found on an asteroid. The symbiote was on an asteroid that they didn't know was there. They were taking rock samples from the asteroid, and they brought it back, or the meteorite, I think is actually what it considered. And they brought it back, and then the symbiote crawled out of it. But J. Jonah Jameson, who is the antagonist in the Spider-Man universe, his son, who he's ultimately proud of, is an astronaut who happens to be the commander of that mission, and then he's the one that inadvertently brings back the symbiote in this movie, which spoiler alert, is a little different. They don't really call him John Jameson. They just mention the fact that his name is John, and on his suit is the last name Jameson.
Yeah.
So, like, that's kind of where you get it from. But in this one, they went out and they were searching for a planetoid that we could live on after we get done ruining this planet. And the fun part about that is the symbiotes were doing the same thing.
Yep.
They were on an asteroid or meteorite or whatever you want to call it, heading towards us. I think it's an asteroid within space, right? If Joe's here, you correct me. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
They, on the way back, they scan, just like if you're ever doing anything, scanning these different things, and they scan this one asteroid and they find out that it has life on it. So they make a take their fancy spaceship and match the speed of it. They go on and they find these life forms. They take life forms off, they bring them back to Earth some shit happens. They crash land. One of them gets out. The other three are taken in, where they are then tested on and things like that. And the thing about the Mike was saying the stories make sense. They take a lot of leaps. Is the science behind the symbiotes just seems to evolve really, really quickly. Of knowing how, what they are, why we need to have human trials, why they need to be attached to a human. And they give you all that in just lines. Instead of having to show you trial and error every time, they just basically tell you, like, hey, we've tried this out, and we've done all these tests, and they can't live in our atmosphere unless they're bonded with a host, and blah, 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 and all these different things. And, of course, it comes down to the key point is when Carlton Drake, the air quotes bad guy of the movie, finally bonds with Riot, he realizes their mistake, the fact that the human symbiote combination, the hybrid they make, is more than just a partnership. It's one has to rely on the other. One can help the other do things, but the other one needs help to survive. And vice versa. Here on Earth, the symbiotes can't survive without a human host and a source of food, which if they don't get food, turns out to be the human host, and eventually that obviously dies out because, you know, we don't regenerate that well. So that was kind of the whole idea behind it, with Eddie and Venom, is it's established right away that, like, Venom's like, bro, I need food. There's like, you need food. Difference is my food needs to be living.
Yep.
You know? And there's some pretty fun scenes with food. There's the tater tot scene. There's the live lobsters in the lobster tank, which was one of the best scenes possible.
As soon as they walk into that, the camera angle starts on a lobster tank, and I was like, oh, he's gonna eat so many of those lobsters right now.
and the best part is that he never transforms.
No,
like
he's just creeping everybody out.
Yeah, so he hasn't fully transformed at all at that point. He's just had glimpses, like when he went and disturbed the neighbor. Obviously, the fight that he got in, he crawls into this fucking tank, sits down like it's a sauna, and starts munching on live lobsters. And I was like, yikes.
Yeah.
Really fun scene. So I guess my favorite things would be, I liked the way they created a viable way of having Venom in the world. I liked the fact that Venom was not this all great powerful thing, the fact that he was the loser from his planet, and I like the fact that Eddie was on top of the world and then on the bottom real fucking quick, and he ruined everything real, and he all did it himself. It wasn't Peter Parker's fault, it wasn't so and so's fault, he did it himself. And he knew he did it himself, but he couldn't. He was trying to be a better person, but also be a shit bag all at the same time.
Yeah, and there is one line in there that in the feature, because this movie has nothing to do with anything Marvel movie wise, has nothing to do with Spider-Man. The only little thing that's like super obvious anyway is they reference, because he's this reporter and he's kind of like, I'll do what I want to get the story kind of thing, and his girlfriend says to him at the time, we don't want another incident like in New York. Yep. And he references the Bugle, so it's like, okay, well, now that we know there's a Jameson and we know there's a Bugle, like, it might not ever mean anything, but you know there's something that happened there that, you know, could set up a conflict later on down the road if they ever want to, or if they ever can go that route. So it was a nice throwaway line, but like, oh, if you're paying attention, you're like, oh, cool. Yeah, he was in New York at one point, and now he's thrown out.
Correct. He actually doesn't say the Bugle. He says it's not the Bugle, it's the Daily Globe.
Globe, sorry.
Which is where he started out before he went to the Bugle. Right. But yes, that's specified, because he leaves the Globe to go work at the Bugle.
You just want
to
say Bugle when you're talking about it.
Yeah. But he mentions that, which means it ties to that. I tell people, not that it matters because most people don't understand what this means, is I like to believe this isn't on that same Earth. I like to look at it as this is a different Earth, and that's why Eddie and the symbiote can happen without reference to Spider-Man. The one thing, though, that still... And you can't do it any differently, but the one thing that still bothers me is the fact that he has Spider-Man eyes when there is no Spider-Man, you know what I mean? Because he gets his overall design from being from copying Spider-Man.
Yeah, but the eyes, though, are so iconic. You can't,
that's what I'm saying. You can't not do that.
But the one touch that they threw in is he doesn't have that spider body on the back or the chest, which is, it's just veins that kind of course and move.
Yep.
So, yeah, like the eyes, yeah, that's a little weird because it is drawn from a Spider-Man suit, or that design. But, like, you can't change the face of Venom. You know what I mean?
Not at all. That's the only thing.
But at least he didn't have a big spider on his chest, which would have kind of killed it.
The one thing that surprised me, though, is Lady Venom. They actually did it, and they made a very fun moment about it.
Yeah, in a way that kind of made sense, too.
Yeah, she rescues him from being murdered. She bites the head off of somebody, and then the symbiote jumps from her to Eddie, knowing that he's a better host, but he needed a vehicle to get there because, again, he can't survive outside. And he needs someone, you know, obviously that knows Eddie enough. And then she mentions, like, did I eat someone's head? He's like, yeah, it's pretty unsettling.
He's like, I've been there. It's not a good feeling.
Yeah, it's really fun. But I like that a lot. And then I was going to say also with the way they designed the symbiote in this too, is it's very, tentacly, you know, like, and he comes out as tentacles. He does have the claws. I like when the motorcycle scene when he's running away and they take that hard corner, you see the tentacles shoot out, grab the light pole, and then you can see it flatten out and literally ripples, and the motorcycle drives around the corner and is able to make that fast corner when obviously the cars couldn't. I do like the way they did that a lot. I kind of wish when he was Venom that it would stay more stationary until he did something, but it was ripply. I mean... But other than that, and the reason why is I wanted to be more of like, oh, the symbiote's formed on him. Like, Riot did it. Riot formed and became that. But then you realize that's actually the difference between the two is Venom is more adaptive in that way, where Riot is more of like that strict, oh, I can make blades out of my body, but I'm also rock hard, blah, blah, blah type thing. So you got to realize there's that going to be a switch between the two. But I would have liked to see more of a symbiote's, the symbiote battles like with the other symbiotes in there as well. And the fact we don't know how Carnage is going to play into this, because obviously Carnage is an offshoot of Venom. He's not a separate symbiote. He's created because of Venom. So it'd be interesting to see how they do that, if they do intend to make another one, because they have to make, if I'm not mistaken.
That's something that might piss people off, but that's something they could just make his own. Because you already established these different symbiotes do different things. So now you can just have Carnage be its own symbiote at this point.
You know, have another, like, oh, we actually had five and blah, 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 or whatever. Yeah. And it's been fucking scrounging around on Earth. And it's one that none of the other symbiotes like, because... it's fucking, all it does is just eat, and murder.
Right.
And the fact that it bonds with, with Cletus Kasady, and just is like, oh, he's bloodthirsty, I'm bloodthirsty, let's murder the shit out of something. So it'd be interesting to see. And the fact, I mean, you could see fucking crazy ass Woody Harrelson talking mad shit in a prison cell.
With crazy red hair.
Yeah. I was like, oh, shit, he looks nutty. Yeah, that's about it for that, I think.
Yeah, but overall, go watch it, man. It's a fun time at the movies.
So I was reading an article, for them to greenlight a sequel, it needs to make $400 million.
Worldwide?
Yep. And it's at $217 right now, before the next weekend hits.
That's 1 week, or?
That is from last Thursday to now, as of recording Wednesday, so a little less than a week.
This should probably get there, then.
Yeah, it definitely get there. It did outpace everybody's expectations, though, for Thursday night and full weekend as well, because everyone is estimating in North America it was going to be do anywhere between I want to say it was 50 to 60 million was what they were estimated at, but it actually grossed 60 to 70 million. I'm reading right now 60 to 70 million was what it was projected to gross, but it actually broke that, and it did 80 million for North America, and did another 100 and something million for outside the United States for a total of 200 and something million dollars. So it's on a really good pace, and like, so it's, you know, that's pretty good. Even in international markets, it was estimated only 100 something million. So it outpaced both outside and inside of the
North America. That's a good sign.
So, and I think it, with this coming weekend, or actually at least I think everywhere in the United States, at least fall break is on. So it's going to help bring families out and maybe see it. I don't know if it's going to be like a family movie, but it will have that younger,
well, it mid-teen it being range. That PG-13, you got that junior high crowd that can go and watch it by themselves, which I was a little bummed when I heard it was PG-13 because I thought it'd be a cool chance to make a cool rated R. But nothing really lacks, though. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing in the movie where I'm like, oh, I'm a little bummed out that this didn't happen or that. Like, they didn't really seem to.
They got their one F-bomb they can use.
And it was placed well.
Was placed well. There was no overt out violence in it, like gore, I should say. There's plenty of violence.
Just plenty of violence. Through walls and gore. Shit.
But there's no gore.
But the way he attacks and the way he strikes doesn't really lead to.
Yeah.
I mean, it could. They obviously could have.
Yeah.
But I don't think it lacks because it's not there. So.
Nope. So, yeah, no, it's a good time. Stanley had a cameo, which is pretty cool. I didn't think that was gonna happen. That was a good little fun little pop up of a cameo. Next up, we're talking about another movie we recently saw that will be available for everybody else to watch this coming Thursday/Friday.
Yeah, but we're what you like to call VIP.
we're special.
Early access to good movies.
And the good movie we're talking about right now is called, I'll get it correct, other than what Deadline got, is Bad Times at the El Royale. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Because there was a Q&A after our screening of it that was streamed, and the guy who was hosting it is a fucking turd bag and can't get the fucking name of a movie he just watched correct. But anyhow, Bad Times. Q&A
was pretty good, though.
Bad Times at El Royale is a movie by Drew Goddard. For the people who don't know Drew Goddard, A, shame on you.
Yeah.
B, he did a fantastic movie starring Thor a couple years ago called Cabin in the Woods. Which is phenomenal and kind of falls in the same craziness that this movie does in its own way, not the same way, but very similar way. But he's also well known for his start on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He worked on Alias. He worked on Lost. He was the creator of the Daredevil show on Netflix.
Boom.
He wrote the movie adaptation of The Martian, as well as several other things. I forgot to mention Angel was in there as well. But his own created stuff, he has Cabin in the Woods and he has Bad Times at El Royale, and I don't think it's going to slow any down anytime soon, especially when the rest of the world sees this fucking movie and realizes this dude's a fucking genius and needs to be, given just tons of money to do what the fuck he wants. Because his vision is amazing, he even says it in the Q&A. He has amazing people working with him that help him do amazing things, and it definitely shows. Because this movie is very similar, like I said, in its attitude, like Cabin in the Woods, but very different in structure than anything you really see. It's very Tarantino-ish in a way,
yeah,
but in the best way possible.
Without feeling it ripped it off. Like, we compared to Tarantino because that's the only other real successful one we've seen do it kind of like this. But it's not even Tarantino. It's not even fully that style. It's just a version of that.
It's basically he tells a story in a way that feels like Tarantino would have done it very similarly this way, if given the chance to do it this way. So this movie, if you don't know who is in this movie, you have Sir Jeff Bridges, the knighthood's coming soon. You have Cynthia Erivo, who's very new to it. You have Dakota Johnson. You have John Hamm. You have a newcomer, Kaylee Spainy, who realized after the fact, I knew I recognized her from somewhere. I just couldn't figure out what it was, and I'll talk about who that is in a minute. You have Chris Hemsworth, and you have Lewis Pullman, who is very, very new. I think this is like first movie he's ever made. He plays Miles, the bellhop slash attendant slash fucking everything. And there's some other people in there too, but it's a very small cast. Very amazing cast. Everyone is phenomenal in this. But we'll do the same thing. Again, we'll start with Mike since he looks like he's ready.
We'll start with Cody.
We'll start with Cody since Mike's not ready. I fucking love this movie. So much so that I think it's my favorite movie of the year. I think. So far, I think
it's
my
definitely favorite movie in contention, for sure.
Because I can't think of anything where I had so much fun and had no idea what was going to happen as much
no
as I did.
No fucking clue what was going on.
Yeah.
Like the twists and turns were fantastic.
Yeah, and it's not even those twists and turns.
And they're like, not cheap ones. They're just they're not the way ones the story that, like, involves.
Steering you one way and then going the other. They literally just, you don't know anything going into it. They give you very little context for anything and then explain everything you could have imagined you wanted to know all in the segments for each of the characters. And the cool way they did it is they have the ensemble come together and then they instantly just jump to one of the characters and tells you all about them. And then they go through the whole thing. But the crazy part of it is you see the interaction with that character and the other characters from like that person's point of view. And then later on, you see the same sequence of time doing the same thing with another character. So you see the other end of that spectrum and that development and that scene and that thing. So there's a lot of reshooting of the same scenes over and over again, but from drastically different viewpoints. Which is really fucking cool. So the three things I liked the most: the music was phenomenal. The way they used the music as part of the actual movie and not just a score in the background. They intertwined it very well and had it moving in and out of the movie. And even talked about in the Q&A about how they used Cynthia Vero's actual singing. She sang live on set to use that as an effect in the movie and for actual reasons in the movie, not just, oh, she's singing and then we'll hear everybody else. It's only in that time. You know what I mean? It wasn't like she's singing and you hear it by everybody else's things. It's only in her little, when she's involved in the stories when you hear it, which is really, really cool. The second thing I liked is the story itself. I liked a lot. And I say that knowing that there's not a whole lot of story, and it's one of those things where it's very Coen's Brothers, if you know what that means, is there's, when you're in it, you start in the middle of what feels like you're in the middle of something that's already going on, and you only get a little bit of what's happening, and then you don't get the rest of it. So you enter an already existing story, you hear and learn all about what's happening right then and there, and then you're right out of it, and there's no real follow-up and further story going on past it. So it's an interesting way of doing it, but the story is phenomenal. The way they told the story is phenomenal. The third thing I liked was actually the characters themselves, because all of them had a lot of differences to them. There's only one real, like, one character that really had was one-sided, and that was Dakota Johnson's character. And it wasn't because that is a badly written character. It's because she only had, her story dictated her only having that one facet, where everyone else, they had one thing, but you were told something else or were shown something else, and you find out that it's not that same thing. And I thought it was really fun. And the fact that all the actors in it were phenomenal. Kaylee Spainy, as I was mentioning earlier, she was actually, she was in, Pacific Rim Uprising, and I didn't realize that until after the fact. I was like, I know her, I still know where I know her from, and then I realized, oh, that's where I know her from. And she doesn't play the same character, like the same, even the same type of character from one place to the other, and I was like, oh,
very different.
I just recognized the face, but I had no idea what it was. And like she fucking killed it in this fucking movie. And I was like, oh, this girl has a career ahead of her that's fucking nonstop if she chooses to be. And my number one surprise thing was actually the way they use the characters. I know I mentioned a little bit earlier, but the way they use the characters and the way that you learn about the characters was very surprising, because it doesn't feel that way from the trailers. But I also, that's how it was in Cabin in the Woods as well, is you go in thinking one thing, and then you realize that the carpet was pulled out from under you, but you realize there was no carpet there to begin with.
Yeah, you weren't even... It's the same thing as Cabin in the Woods. You go in thinking, all right, well, this is what it's going to be. And it's not so much it's a twist. It's just you're completely wrong in thinking that that's what it was.
Yeah.
It's a completely different film.
Yeah. And I got what we discussed before, what we wanted out of it. It was, we wanted the chance for people like Chris Hemsworth, who really hasn't had a chance to really broaden his acting and be something different other than the fact that he's been doing Thor for the last 10 years. And the few things he's been in, he's been good in, but they haven't really been a vehicle for him to actually act in. I haven't seen Black Hat, so I can't say if that is or not, but the movie looked atrocious, so I wasn't going to see it.
The Whale one. Beyond the Sea?
Is that it? Yeah, Beyond the Sea.
That's the one. Citing that is what made me excited for him to have this role.
Yes.
Because Beyond the Sea, you get to see something completely different than you do in Thor or any other action movie. You see him use a broad range of emotions and be more of a human character. And I thought he did a really good job in that, and I really liked that movie, but nobody really saw that movie.
In the Heart of the Sea.
In the Heart of the Sea. There we go. Beyond the Sea sounds like a weird Lifetime movie. So knowing that he had that in his arsenal a few years ago, when I saw this and I saw who wrote it, I was like, oh dude, like he's gonna be able to shock people with this one, I think. And he did. Like, he fucking killed it. And he's not even in it that much.
No.
That's the thing, but like he's like one of those characters where you're like, oh, you did such a good job and you made such a big impact. But if you're looking at the call sheet, he's a sixth lead in it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 down.
Yeah, so I mean that tells you how big and powerful his performance was, that he can make that much of an impact with the least amount of screen time as anybody else in the movie.
Yeah. And the fact that like he is in the way has never shown this kind of characterization ever in anything I've ever seen him in. And the fact that like if you know about what his character is, which I'm not going to spoil it for you here, he embodies this character so well that you're like, oh, I think this is all this dude has ever been born to do, is this fucking creature that he is in this movie. And it's so well done. And he's so... Every time he's on the fucking screen, he's just like, Jesus, dude, you are an actor. Yeah. Like, holy shit, man. But, yeah, he's phenomenal in it. Jeff Bridges is amazing in it. Everybody was so fucking good in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I think the most hardcore, amazing performance done by anybody was Lewis Pullman, who played Miles, the bellhop. And it's because he's not even in it nearly as much as a lot of the other characters are, but he is the acting this kid pulls off in this fucking movie is unbelievable. To me, at least, I thought it was. Yeah. I think he was fucking tremendous in it. But anyway, so that's me. Michael.
The way we're talking about it, I love this movie as well. It was, again, knowing who wrote it and going into it, I was expecting one thing from the trailers, but I kind of knew like, oh, this very easily could go a way different way, and it goes a way different way. And then throughout the movie too, you don't know like what's what going on. Like you get in the background of everybody throughout the course, but then the climax of the movie, you don't know where it's going, because in my head, I thought it was gonna, you know, thin down to a couple certain people, and it does not go to those people. And no. I'm like, oh, okay, fuck. Now I don't know what's going on. Now it's a whole nother ball game. So that was cool. So that would be my first favorite thing, is the fact that it's not at all what I was expecting, but in the best possible way imaginable, because it was so much better than what I thought it was gonna be. Yes. And I thought it was gonna be fucking dope, but it was way better than that.
It was way better than dope. You heard it here first. Yeah.
My stamp of approval. And I'm just going to say, like, just the performances in general would be my second favorite thing. Who was the singer again? What was her name?
That is Cynthia Vero.
I don't know who she is, but I will pay money to watch whatever she has coming out next.
She's tremendous.
Because she is amazing in this movie. In a movie where you have Chris Hemsworth and you have Jeff Bridges, and the majority of her scenes are with Jeff Bridges.
This is her second movie ever.
Okay, yeah. So
she's a lot of theatrical stuff, but her career goes back to the bygone year of 2011.
Oh, wow. so yeah, and the majority of her scenes are one-on-one scenes with Jeff Bridges. And if you're a fan of Jeff Bridges, you know this dude can chew up scenery and spit out dialogue like very few can. And she is just hanging with him every fucking step of the way, back and forth. And she is not. There's been movies where people don't look like they're capable of hanging with somebody like Jeff Bridges' character. But she looks like an old seasoned vet, dude. She was every step of the way. She did not lose a beat. She might have even outshined him in certain parts too, which is fucking nuts. And it's not like Jeff Bridges lulled on this one. Jeff Bridges was fucking amazing too.
He's on point.
Yeah. And one of, honestly, probably Jeff Bridges' best performance since Crazy Heart.
Yeah, I would say so.
Like, realistically, his best performance since Crazy Heart. Because he got a bunch of stuff to work with in this one. This is just juicy characters for these actors to go with. I'm like, if I'm an actor, I call up the writer and I'm like, yo, whatever you're doing next, I want a role. I don't care. It, like, because Hemsworth proved it could be the smallest role in the movie. It's you're gonna have something to sink your teeth into and really perform the fuck out of it. So just the performances in general, and then like I say, Chris Hemsworth too. He got to show a side he hasn't been able to show before, and I really think he's gonna shock people when this movie comes out and everyone gets a chance to see it. That not only is this guy just, you know, a handsome, charismatic action star, he's a legit actor.
Yeah.
And like, even more, like, it goes back again to my theory that Americans don't make good actors anymore. Like, if you're a foreign dude, you're probably going to be better at it. And he proves that theory because he's way better.
She proves that theory too. She's British as well.
Is she British as well? What? Fuck me, dude. Jeff Bridges is the last good one, apparently.
John Hamm. I mean, John Hamm's American.
Yeah, John Hamm does. And that's another part,
too. Is he American or is he Canadian?
Oh, no. He better be American. We need something to hang on to, man. We got Chris Pratt. That's about it. That's about it.
Nope, he's American.
Yeah, John Hamm, USA.
USA.
But yeah, so the performances in general. And then another one that Cody said, but it bears repeating, is the use of the soundtrack. And that goes, again, with the, I'm not going to remember her name, but
Cynthia
Vivaro. She provides a huge chunk of the soundtrack, and you find out later, or you don't find out in the Q&A, you find out that she sang. There's a key moment in the movie when you really understand that, like, well, nothing's really gonna go down the way we think it's gonna go down.
Shit's already turned around.
But she provides the soundtrack to that moment. And she sung this song multiple takes to the point where he said she was singing for about 27 minutes straight.
27 takes. So multiple minutes
at a time. So, and multiple minutes at a time. And it's a big one-shot scene. So you can't really fuck that up. You know what I mean? If you fuck that up, you ruin the whole scene.
Well, that's the thing, what he said, too. Remember, he's like, she did it so well that they had to ask her to fuck up parts.
A part to... Because... So people could realize it was a real performance. And it's that song has been stuck in my head. I don't even want to give away the song because it's so, I don't know why it works so well, but it just fucking works so well. And so the way the soundtrack is incorporated to the movie, and it becomes a, not only just a piece of the movie, but it becomes a driving factor of the story later on in the movie. And not only just that song, other songs too, and it becomes a topic of conversation. It moves the narrative forward in a way that a soundtrack hasn't done that I can remember in a long time. There's other movies that have done it, not quite the way this movie has done it, but the soundtrack is like another character to this movie. And it's pretty remarkable. And then again, the thing that surprised me is just the fact that it was so surprising is the thing that surprised me the most. There's a twist at the end when everything looks dire and fucked, and there's no hope for the characters that you
anybody
ultimately, but the ones you end up having real feelings for, you get real sympathy for, which again, I don't even want to tell you which characters were probably going to feel like that, but it's probably not the ones you thought you were going to care about in the first of the movie. But there's a twist where, and it doesn't, it's surprising, but it makes sense. And then you get one more backstory that you weren't expecting, and it's so fucking good. And like Cody said, if this is not the best movie of the year, it is definitely up there. It's a hard thought process to come up with something that's going to be better than this.
It's, come December, we're going to think about it, though.
It's December.
The end of the year when we usually go over our favorite movies of the year.
We usually do that in October. We usually do that a little bit.
That's mid. Early. It's midway through.
Yeah. But yeah, it's super dope. You'll love this. If you don't like this movie,
go fuck yourself.
I honestly don't know what you're looking for in an experience for a movie, because everything's there. The writing is there. The performances are there. The set pieces, the music, the sound quality, the visuals, like, it's so good. And the fact that it plays in the '70s.
60s.
Yeah, it has to be 60s. Yeah. The fact that it plays in the 60s, it lets you come out of your head a little bit and submerge yourself in that time, which I think was a key point, because obviously some of the story couldn't happen the way it happened if it was today.
Yeah.
But the writer's good enough and clever enough where I think he would have figured it out. But I think it helps you submerge yourself into this moment in time and really understand, or just really like enjoy it. Like, it takes you out of anything modern day. You're not seeing stuff that you see or that you like, you know what I mean? Like, you're just in this world and you're experiencing this movie, and it's one of the best times you're going to have at the theater. And this is a movie too, that this movie has legs. The rewatchability of this movie is going to be one of those ones, like, you're going to buy it when it comes out on iTunes or however you consume your media after movie theaters. Because when this comes out on HBO or it hit cable, like, this is a movie that we're going to talk about in 10, 15 years that, oh shit, this movie's on right now. I'm going to, wherever it's at, on whatever channel, I'm going to finish it from that point.
Yep.
You do that with, like, Goodfellas. When you're flipping through and AMC has Goodfellas, you watch Goodfellas the rest of the way. You do that with
in the first Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah, or any of the classics. I do it with Rocky, you know what I mean? Like, anytime I come across Rocky, I'm finishing that movie. Shawshank Redemption.
And when he says finish that movie, he's going to literally
finish
that movie.
That movie with my dick.
And he's going to say every line that comes up.
I could probably, and it's sad.
Yeah.
But like the same thing with Shawshank Redemption. Like, when's the last time you passed by Shawshank Redemption and you didn't at least watch it for a little while?
You don't bypass.
Exactly.
You're like, oh,
and this is gonna be one of those movies. I don't know how Oscars and shit work, but best original screenplay.
This is gonna get a lot of technical stuff. If it doesn't win any acting stuff, I shame on everybody. But like technical stuff and behind the scenes stuff, original screenplay, director for sure, cinematography for fuck sure,
sound
editing too, like both of those, for production, set production,
all those Oscars that you don't see out on TV, they're going to be in the running for, yeah, and it very easily could have a best actor, best actress, best supporting actor.
I can see two best supporting actor actresses coming out of this, and almost people competing against each other.
Yeah,
easily.
Yeah, for sure.
The only person, again, I said this, and this isn't a knock on her because I've never seen her in anything before. This is Dakota Johnson.
She was the 50 Shades girl.
Yeah,
which she's so much more. I thought she would be the weak link going in.
She was really good in this, but the only thing is like, what's bad for her in this is she's going to get outshined by everybody because she has only one role.
She has a one-note character, but it's...
And it's not one-note because she's acting it this way.
Yeah.
It's literally that's the character.
She has one story that she's trying to figure out and one issue that she's trying to fix. And everybody else has a little side thing, which... It's not even a writing. It's just she got this part, and this part needed to be this part for the sake of the story.
That's the character,
and it all makes sense when you see it. I know we're talking around. We're doing a really good job of avoiding spoilers, which we usually don't do on the show.
Volcano.
So
you'll understand.
So just, I mean, watch this when it comes out. It is so worth your time and money to go see this movie.
If you're a single moviegoer a month type person, I implore you to make this the movie you go see in theaters.
Yeah, if you're a one a week, it's a no-brainer. Even if you're down to a one a month and you're waiting for one, this is the one.
This is the one you need to see. Because everything about it is needed to be seen on the big screen, but also to be experienced with the sound.
Yeah, you get with a from good sound there. System is because probably even more important.
The sound design in this movie is fucking ridiculous. I mean, everything in it, because it's just the way that things happen and I wish we could talk more about it without trying to spoil stuff, because I really want you guys to be more surprised. Because
that's how you know we like this movie. Yeah, because if it was just a good movie, we just talk about it.
We would ruin the whole thing for you. But this one is, like I said, I think this is my favorite movie of the year. Because of the originality, the amount of fun you had, the emotions, just, it's a fucking roller coaster. There's parts where Mike might have cried.
I cried for sure. There's one part, if you don't,
you're a fucking monster.
You're a monster. Especially because it's something that has to do with something that you've probably experienced in your life. And if you haven't, good on you. But if you have, you'll understand when you watch this movie. It is fucking painful at one point. And you wouldn't... If the sympathy wasn't built up correctly for this character, you probably wouldn't give a fuck. But it's so well done. It's just... There's not a flaw in it. There's no real flaw to this movie, technically or artistically. It's a perfect film. It is exactly what it wanted to be. Like, you can't say it made any missteps on what it was trying to be. And you might not like what it was trying to be, and I understand that, but...
It's not that.
It's exactly what it was supposed to be.
Yep. I went in thinking one thing, came out... loving everything that was not what I thought it was. And it's just, I mean, Drew Goddard is a fucking genius. And I'm glad he doesn't make as many movies as he possibly could.
Because he takes his time on the important things.
And the fact that, like, he literally got done writing the adaptation of The Martian, got done doing that and instantly went into making this and did nothing else between that, really, and this.
Just and not, we're not saying better. When The Martian came out, he started it. When he got done writing
The Martian,
he started doing this. Yeah. And this is the accumulation of 4 years of work.
Easily, yeah.
Three and a half, 4 years of work. And it shows. This dude has, like, the ultra green light now. Whatever he wants to do,
he's studios are going to throw money in his face.
I'm like going to throw money in his face. If I ever see him walking around, chucking my wallet right
I'd say 4 years, because he probably got done writing The Martian in, like, probably 14 or 13. So 4 to 5 years. But, I mean, the dude's career is nonstop fucking just full force and makes me more excited about what's going to come down the pipeline, because it's going to be more his shit, I'm sure. But we don't know of anything, because he's got three things slated right now he's going to be doing. He's going to be doing the X-Force movie, writing and directing. And he has two movies set to be that are based on novels. So just know that he's writing a bunch of those. He's only directing X-Force after Bad Times at El Royale. And then so look forward to whatever he makes after he turns in the scripts for Nevermore and Wrath of the Broken Land, because it's gonna probably be another masterpiece.
It's gonna be good.
So that's it, everybody, for this week's episode. Unless Mike has anything else, but he doesn't, so let's go.
Yep.
All right. Oh, and by the way, if people haven't seen Venom yet and you're gonna go see it, mid-credit scene, and if you're interested in it, a post-credit clip from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is phenomenal.
Which is interesting how they presented it.
Yes.
Which...
Did you notice how they did it?
Yeah. Very, very interesting. Because it could have just gone in, it could have just said, hey, now a clip from the upcoming Into the Spider-Verse movie.
Nope.
But it said, meanwhile, in a different universe.
Before that, did you see what happened in the credits before that, though?
Mm.
This is what threw me off. And as I said this to Joel right before it happened, the song list is going up, and the last song listed before, like, so the last song playing was the title song from the movie, and then in the list, it says, title theme from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. In the actual credits list for Venom, and then it goes, meanwhile, another universe, and it jumps into, I was like,
yeah, so that
was really fun
for you, like, deep comic book fans. Like, that's an interesting. They didn't do that on accident, which leads me to believe that they're doing the whole, like, this is our universe. This is the universe where Eddie Brock and Venom are anti-heroes. There's another universe where there's a Peter Parker and a Spider-Man. That might not be this one.
Yep,
and. It's a comic book movie, man. You don't even know what's going to happen down the road with that. So,
and that the list of people in that movie. If you haven't seen the trailer for Into the Spider-Verse, do yourself a favor and watch the newest one.
In terms of animated movies, visually it looks stunning, and it just looks fun as fuck. So,
and John Mulaney as Spider-Ham is
Spider-Ham, man. One
of the greatest things.
Come on, now. Imagine you're gonna see Spider-Ham on the big screen.
Spider-Ham,
definitely watch that
for sure. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode. Comes naturally. We are
Joe, Mike.
I am Cody, and again, that wasn't Joe. That was just Mike doing an impression of that piece of shit. Get well soon, buddy. Not that you'll hear this, because you're a garbage human being. Don't listen to your own
everything
show.
We said was actually wrong. He's a very nice guy.
He's the best person you don't know yet.
And a physically fit human, so.
And has a huge dick.